49. The farms were dark, the overhead lights sleeping on their distantly clicking timers. Down a long and leafy hall, voices spilled as grow plots were claimed, and those claims were just as quickly disputed. Things that were not owned by anyone became owned. It reminded Hannah of troubling times. She clutched her child to her chest and stuck close to Rickson. Young Miles led the way with his dying flashlight. He beat it in his palm whenever it dimmed, which somehow coaxed more life out of it. Hannah glanced back in the direction of the stairwell.
"What's taking Solo so long?" she asked.
Nobody answered. Solo had chased after Elise. It was common enough for her to run off after some distraction, but it was different with all these people everywhere. Hannah was worried. The child in her arms wailed. It did this when it was hungry. It was allowed to. Hannah clamped down on her own complaints. She was hungry, too. She adjusted the child, unhooked one strap of her overalls, and gave the infant access to her breast. The hunger was worse with the pressure of eating for two. And where crops had once brushed against her arms along that hall, where an empty stomach was one of the few things she never need fear, burgeoning plots stood startlingly empty, ravaged, owned. Stalk and leaf rustled like paper as Rickson climbed over the rail and explored the second and third rows, hunting for a tomato or cucumber, or any of the berries that had gone wild and had spread through the other crops, their curly arms twining around the stalks of their brethren. He returned noisily and pressed something into Hannah's hand, something small with a soft spot where it had rested on the ground for too long.
"Here," he said, and went back to searching. "Why would they take so much all at once?"
Miles asked, digging for food of his own. Hannah sniffed the small offering from Rickson, which smelled vaguely like squash, but underripe. The voices in the distance lifted in argument. She took a small bite and recoiled at the bitter taste.
"They took so much because they aren't family," Rickson said.
His voice leaked from behind dark plants that trembled from his passing. Young Miles aimed his flashlight toward Rickson, who emerged from the rows of corn stalks empty-handed.
"But we aren't family," Miles said. "Not really. And we never did this."
Rickson hopped over the rail.
"Of course we're family," he said. "We live together and work together like families are supposed to. But not these people, haven't you seen? Seen how they dress differently so they can be told apart? They don't live together. These strangers will fight like our parents fought. Our parents weren't family either."
Rickson untied his hair and collected the loose strands around his face, then tied it all back up. His voice was hushed, his eyes peering into the darkness where voices argued.
"They'll do like our parents and fight over food and women until there aren't any of them left, which means we'll have to fight back if we want to live."
"I don't want to fight," Hannah said.
She winced and pulled the baby away from her sore nipple, began working her overalls to switch breasts.
"You won't have to fight," Rickson said.
He helped with her overalls.
"They left us alone before," Miles said. "We lived back here for years, and they came and took what they needed and didn't fight us. Maybe these people will do the same."
"That was a long time ago," Rickson said.
He watched the baby settle into its mother's breast, then ranged down the railing and into the darkness to forage some more.
"They left us alone because we were young and we were theirs. Hannah and I were your age. You and your brother were toddlers. No matter how bad the fighting got, they left us kids alone to live or die by our own devices. It was a gift, the way they abandoned us."
"But they used to come," Miles said, "and bring us things." "Like Elise and her sister?" Hannah asked.
And now she and Rickson had both brought up deceased siblings.
That hall was full of the dead and gone, she realized, the plucked from above.
"There will be fighting," she told Miles, who still didn't seem so sure. "Rickson and I aren't kids any longer."
She rocked the baby in her arms, that suckling reminder of just how far from kids they'd become.
"I wish they'd just leave," Miles said morosely.
He banged the flashlight, which gave forth like a burped baby.
"I wish it could all go back to normal. I wish Marcus was here. I don't feel right without him."
"A tomato,"
Rickson said, emerging victorious from the shadows. He held the red orb in the beam of Miles's light, which threw a blush across all their faces. A knife materialized. Rickson cut the vegetable into thirds, with Hannah getting hers first. Red juice like blood dripped from his hand, from Hannah's lips, and from the knife. They ate in relative quiet, the voices down the hall distant and scary. The knife dripping with life, but capable of dripping with worse. Jimmy cursed himself as he climbed the stairs. He cursed as he used to, with only himself to hear.
with words that never had far to travel, moving from his lips to his own ears. He cursed himself and stomped around and around, sending vibrations up and down to mingle with others. Keeping an eye on Elise had turned into a bother. One glance in the other direction, and off she went, like Shadow used to when all the grow lights popped on at once.
"No, not like Shadow," he mumbled to himself.
Shadow had stayed underfoot most days. He had always been tripping over Shadow. Elise was something else. Another level went past, alone and empty, and Jimmy remembered that this wasn't new. This wasn't sudden. Elise was forever coming and going however she liked. He had just never worried about her when the silo was empty. It made him reconsider what made a place dangerous. Maybe it wasn't the place at all.
"You!"
Jimmy rose to another landing, 122. A man waved from the doorway. He had gold coveralls on, which meant something back when things had meaning. It was the first face Jimmy had seen in a dozen levels.
"Have you seen a girl?"
Jimmy asked, ignoring the fact that this man seemed to have a question of his own. Jimmy held his hand at his hip.
"This high, 7 years old, missing a tooth."
He pointed past his beard at his own teeth. The man shook his head.
"No, but you're the man who used to live here, right? The survivor?"
The man had a knife in his hand, which flashed silver like a fish in water. The man in gold then laughed and peered beyond the landing's rail.
"I guess we're all survivors, aren't we?"
Reaching out, he took hold of one of the rubber hoses Jimmy and Juliet had affixed to the wall to carry off the floods. With a deft swipe of the knife, the hose parted. He began hauling up the lower part, which dangled free far below.
"That was for the floods," Jimmy began.
"You must know a lot about this place," the man said.
"I'm sorry, my name's Terry Harlson. I'm on the planning commit—"
He squinted at Jimmy.
"Hell, you don't know or care, do you? We're all from the same place to you." "Jimmy," he said. "My name's Jimmy, but most people call me Solo. And that hose, you have any idea where this power's coming from?"
Terry jerked his head at the green lights that dotted the underside of the stairs.
"We're up another 40 levels from here. Radio there's got power. Some of these wires strung up all over the place got juice, too. You do that?" "Some of it," Jimmy said. "Some was already like that. A little girl named Elise came this way. Did you?" "I reckon the power's coming from above, but Tom told me to check down here. He says the power always came from below in our silo. Should be the same in this one. Everything else is. But I saw the high water mark down there where this place was full of water. I don't think power's been coming from there in a while. But you should know, right? This place got any secrets you can tell us about? Love to know about that power."
The hose lay in a coil at the man's feet. The knife was back out, glimmering in his hand.
"You ever thought of being on a committee?" "I need to find my friend," Jimmy said.
Another swipe, but the electrical cord put up more resistance. It was the copper at the center. The man held a loop of the black wire in his hand and sawed back and forth, great muscles bulging beneath an undershirt stained with sweat. After some exertion, the knife burst free, the cord severed in two.
"If your friend ain't with the men in the farm, she's probably up with the chanters. I passed them on my way down. They found a chapel."
Terry jabbed the knife skyward before stuffing it away and looping wire around his arm.
"A chapel," Jimmy said. He knew the one. "Thank you, Terry." "Only fair," the man said, shrugging. "Thanks for telling me where all this power comes from." "The power?" "Yeah, you said it came from above, from level 34? I said that?"
The man smiled.
"I believe you did."